And so what you don't want to have is 25 meetings to get to the final decision. That's woefully inefficient. On the other hand, you can have no decisions.
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
Here today with Dr. Robert Adamson, the Executive Vice President and Chief Information Officer at Robert Wood Johnson Barnabas Health. Dr. Adamson is the operational leader for the Epic Electronic Health Record implementation at RWJ Barnabas, and previously was a chief pharmacy officer and characterizes himself as more of an informaticist than a technologist. For those who don't know, as background, Robert Wood Johnson Barnabas Health is a health system based in West Orange, New Jersey, with 4,500 beds and 11,500 providers in 19 hospitals and other care facilities. It is also New Jersey's largest private employer with 33,000 employees. So, Dr. Adamson, I know that you're in the middle of an epic conversion that includes the entire health system, hospital, physician practices, also Rutgers Medical School. If you could characterize how you've been able to organize a team in 6 words pertaining to this epic conversion, how would you do so?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And what I would say is when I thought about the ITNS group, I needed to come up with a way where we can organize everything that we needed to do around 6 words. And we actually have a logo called Aspire, and that stands for A is for advocacy, S is for security, P is people-centric, I is innovation, R is resources, and E is excellence. And what's wonderful is if you were to go to an agenda at any one of our ITNS groups, it's organized the exact same 6 words. If you look at our strategic plan, same 6 words. If you look at all the goals, whether they're individual goals or shared goals, it's the same 6 words. So what winds up happening is when I do my one-on-ones, whenever I'm doing anything with this team, everybody knows what are the 6 words, what is true north, and then how are we going to organize things. One of the things we found with the Epic conversion, and as most of you know, a lot of you have probably done this before, but many of you may not have done this through COVID. And we were knee deep right into where we needed to activate the project. And there was a lot of pressure to actually put the project on hold and pause it. So I said, well, I don't understand why we're making such an emotional decision. I said, we need to do something with a little more scientific rigor. So what I basically said was, let's go through every work group that we have, and there are 170 of those. True, if half of them are not going to be available during COVID, then sure, we would stop. But if really we have more than, if we have less than a third that are completely unavailable, then I think we should move forward strategically. As an example, if you're an interventional cardiologist, they were readily available. But if you worked in the ED, obviously you were not. And so what we did is we went through that, and instead of making it a yes or a no question, it became one of what's the availability, and then could we actually meet more frequently with the ones who were available and less frequently with the ones who weren't. And then what we did is we took the Epic playbook and we redid the entire thing so that all the people who are out of pocket went last in the decisions. All the ones that were available went first in the decisions. And by doing that and working with Epic, I'm proud to say that we went live on time and under budget right through the pandemic without any changes or any stops. All of this was because of a strategic pause. Rather than making it a binary question, you can go and say, let's ask the question differently. I know you can't meet every week. Could you meet at least 1 hour once a month, just so we can keep advancing? And when you give people different choices, you get different answers. And then what we did was we were able to thread that needle, and the team did a remarkable job with that.
So, yeah, it sounds like you started a 5-year project that is expected to be completed in 2024. So you started in 2019, and your average weekly tasks that were accomplished rose from 33 to 180, 496. By April, I think, of 2020, you're up to 521. You even went up to 1,309 tasks accomplished in 1 week. Can you speak about that level of productivity and how you've sustained it after COVID?
So great question. So one of the things was there was a high degree of aversion to going fully remote. The thought was at the time, now it's sort of something that no one would ever believe moving forward. But back in the day, people were like, wait a minute, if they're going to be remote, How are they going to be productive? And what we found was just the opposite. We found that no one was commuting to work. No one had time to move around and start talking about different things. How did a particular baseball team do last night? Those kinds of things kind of got devoid. And it turned out we actually got more efficient. Well, because we are, for the most part, fully remote with some hybrid positions, obviously those that are patient-facing, customer-facing, et cetera. Those aside, what we found was by keeping everybody remote, we took the same exact playbook and just kept moving forward, which was to do this in an efficient manner. We discovered that people flying in for the week, as an example, rather than doing that, gave them all this availability, and we actually got more productivity. We had the opposite problem, which was how to get people to shut off and to shut down. And so what we did is we did a lot of things that forced function, where we said, this is protected time. You have to take your protected time. This is the time we're all going to get together and celebrate something that has nothing to do with this job and get to know each other. And by inserting those kind of points, we've maintained that to this day. We do two huge events, one in the middle of the year and the end of the year, where more than 600 to 700 of our colleagues of the 903 in all of ITNS will get together for unity, purpose, mission, and then celebrations.
Interesting. So I noticed, I just want to follow up on what you, on both items that you said. So Epic had estimated productivity would decrease 30 to 40% by people not being in the office. And what you actually found was a 43% increase in productivity. But what also many of our listeners would identify with is, though they saw increased productivity during COVID, many of our listeners, other healthcare organizations around the country, have also seen increased provider burnout. And I think what you just mentioned is that those two events a year allows for more socialization, reduction in burnout. Would you be able to speak to provider engagement and burnout and how you've been addressing that?
Yeah, so in essence, what we find is, and I'm sure you understand this, and that is when you're home sitting, talking into a screen, there is no natural way to tell you to stop. And so what we did is we inserted for both providers, the people in ITNS, there were scheduled times that we have protected time. And we call it a siesta fiesta. And so basically what it said was, siesta is essentially when you need to take time away and you're completely out of pocket, you're protected, so that you don't actually have to have a meeting at that time. That's the siesta time. And then fiesta is when you're encouraged to take your time away. Obviously, with active go-lives, there are a couple of periods where we would prefer nobody to be out for obvious reasons. You're either going up, leading up to a go-live, or obviously you're supporting and stabilizing after a go-live. So those are times where nobody really can be off. But what we do is we use something called fiesta siesta. And that's what we refer to people to remind people that there needs to be a siesta. And then obviously there needs to be an engagement with your family, get back with your family and have a fiesta with them.
So you've mentioned we've spoken so far about this Epic Together strategic pause. And this was for the Epic migration, especially within the context of a fully remote workforce due to the pandemic. But I'd like to quote you. You said, we found out that 70% of the people we needed to build the system were fully available to keep making decisions. So I directed the team to put all people who weren't available at the end of the build and all people who were available to move them forward. So what I'd like to ask is, the numbers that you have produced due to your strategic approach to prioritization of this particular go live are very impressive. I'd like, but of course, the pandemic is in our past. Hopefully there won't be another one. You're moving towards the end of this Epic implementation. And I think a lot of our listeners are saying, this is great, but how could I apply these lessons to other sorts of tasks and strategic initiatives at my organization? Would you be able to perhaps tell how you've taken some of these lessons and applied them elsewhere, Robert Wood Johnson, and also shown how to prioritize, balance, increase productivity elsewhere in the organization?
Yeah, so one of the things we found with ITNS is that I did an inventory of all the meetings that we were attending as a group, and I characterized them in three buckets: early awareness, mid awareness, and late awareness. And what we found was the majority of our meetings were late awareness, which means we were getting this information at the end and then scrambling to get this all done. What I tried to do is move the entire team to early awareness. So as an example, to your point, when I find out that there are three construction delays, why would I want people to continue going down that road of wiring a building that doesn't have a certificate of occupancy for us to even get in there? And I know that because I'm on the early awareness curve. Mm-hmm. I can redirect those resources to something that's fully ready, ready to go, so that we maximize capacity management. The only way you can do that as an IT&S organization is to move from the mid and late awareness to the early awareness. So something as simple as working in a hospital, I asked a simple question: show of hands, all of the site directors, which one of you is on the space planning committee? And only half of them raised their hand, which means the other half didn't even realize that they were changing spaces, changing new locations, doing these things. The whole hospital knew, but IT. Then you wonder why there's this mad dash at the end. Mm-hmm. And so by moving to taking an inventory of what I call the early, mid, and late awareness, I have early awareness, which means best information, so I can redirect things much the same way we did with the strategic pause. Obviously, when I'm pausing things, I'm not going to focus on that. I'm going to focus on what's available that I could build during the epic build. Mm-hmm. And the same thing is true here. Why would I focus all their time on something that I already now know won't be ready for us? And now what do? So we redirect those people. So that project is basically sitting in a pause, but I only mm-hmm. know that because I'm at the right meetings and at the right cadence, and I know where that information's coming from.
So you've mentioned that right now, Robert Wood Johnson Barnabas is involved in restructuring of the IT&S, which stands for Information Technology and Services function, and also governance. You've just spoken a little bit about how you're prioritizing meetings. It sounds almost like a Lean Sigma approach, but would you be able to delve deeper into the restructuring of the whole function and governance as well?
Yeah, great question. So what we had was we had people meeting in silos and in, I would say, in lanes of function. You know, the security team was meeting as a security team, but there wasn't a broader governance beyond that. And so the first thing we established was an IT&S Executive Council. So I'm proud to say I have 16 vice president colleagues that I'm a member of. And those 16 are in all these different lanes. That's the Executive Council. That is the final decision. So I have mm-hmm. underneath that an IT&S steering council. They deal with just internal IT things. Then we have an IT&S strategic council. That's customer facing operations. That's all together. Those are recommending bodies feeding up to our executive council, which is the only council that can endorse any of those decisions. Then sitting underneath these, we have a number of things, but the one I'm most proud of is the workforce committee, which is actually made up in three or four lanes. We have a ladders program, we have a capacity management program, work-life balance program, etc. And it's made up of a chair and a vice chair of the membership of our actual group, and then obviously groups on each one of those committees. All of these will funnel up to the governance so that they can make recommendations, ultimately so that the executive team can either endorse, change, migrate, fix, etc. Prior to that, there was a lot of email confirmations, people saying things like, well, I spoke to so-and-so and so-and-so, I think we're good to go. Mm-hmm. That's awareness and that's institutional knowledge. That's not governance. What we wanted to do is to make sure that there was a plurality to it, to say, hey, I need a motion to approve, going to Robert's Rules of Order. All of those things have made all of our decisions, I like to call it, durable. What we had in the past was decisions that were made and then remade several times, and then that caused scope creep, delays, et cetera. By making it an inclusive process with all the stakeholders within IT&S, you now have plurality, and now you also have a multidisciplinary approach, which means once we all agree, you can't come back later and say, I didn't know. And so once we all have that as a unified voice, our decisions have been very durable. Where in the past they weren't as durable because of a lack of governance.
So I find it interesting. There's a theme of prioritizing time and ensuring efficiency in decision-making. You spoke about the Epic Together strategic pause and how you identified certain stakeholders at the organization who are available now for this thing and others who weren't, and you affected your schedule accordingly. So you've also spoken about different sorts of meetings, meetings that were early, mid, late awareness, where a lot of the meetings had been. I want to just ask a general question, which is delegation. You said there's lots of different subcommittees. You said there's a workforce committee, there's a strategy committee. How have you been balancing delegating committees versus having too many meetings and committees? Because again, there's work that needs to be done. You need to prioritize things in order to get work done. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like there's a lot of structure and governance, and now there's a proliferation of meetings and committees. How have you struck a balance between delegating and ensuring that there is a unanimous decision and that we are moving forward with transparency versus too many meetings and committees preventing us from doing our work?
Yeah, so what you need is, the first thing I decided is what are recommending bodies, what are endorsing bodies? And so what you don't want to have is 25 meetings to get to the final decision. That's woefully inefficient. On the other hand, you can't have no decisions. So it's always that thing where you want to have the minimum necessary. Mm-hmm. And so in essence, what we did is we did an inventory of all of our meetings. If you could see my office, I had them all strewn on my walls. And then each group had to come in and say, I said, if we didn't have this meeting, what would happen? And a lot of cases they said, nothing. I said, well, then maybe we don't need this meeting. And we went through an inventory of what meetings made sense, which ones still made sense, and then what was the gap? What were the things that didn't connect these? And so we actually deactivated a number of committees that just didn't make sense. They weren't really effective. And then aligned new ones that were actually already there. They were just realigned. This one was sitting by itself, but it led to nowhere. I'm like, well, after you make a decision, where does it go? And they said, great question. Don't know. I said, well, let's get that connected. So there was two bodies of work. I would say we stood up a handful of committees, net new. Mm-hmm. The majority of this, honestly, was just realignment to make sure that when a decision was made somewhere, it went in a broad enough audience so everybody knew about a particular project. What was the timeline? Who owned what, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the ways we do that is through a product called Workfront, which is a project management tool that we use. Everything goes through Workfront. So everybody now obviously knows who's got what, whose tasks are what, and that there are dependencies that are related to governance, but I wouldn't say it's onerous because I don't want to portray that I stood up 31 new committees. I would say I stood up probably three committees overarching, the ones I talked about, and then the workforce committee was to give back to our colleagues, giving the people that were asked to lead a voice back to us in a structured way. That's basically what we stood up. So it wasn't hundreds of things. It was just the opposite, peeling the onion to get to the core.
Excellent. We are approaching the end of this podcast episode. So just to get some high-level overviews in terms of setting the context for this migration to Epic, if you were to characterize the migration process, you know, what EHR did you migrate from? Kind of how many years of clinical data are you importing into Epic? How many years are you archiving? What are you doing to allow clinicians access to data that isn't being imported into Epic? Just kind of some of the high level questions that people who are going through a similar Epic migration may be facing themselves. Just quick high level overview.
Yeah, so we had to migrate from three different systems: Allscripts, Cerner, and the last one will be MEDITECH, which is next year. Those data were actually 5 years worth of data was brought into Epic. So when you went live with Epic, you had 5 years worth of patient data. Anything greater than 5 years, we archived everything, and it was completely retrievable in context. When we actually put that into the database. So if you're in Epic, You can look at your archive and sort it pretty efficiently to find anything greater than 5 years old. But candidly, as a former clinician, there's very little utility beyond 5 years, perhaps maybe legal and maybe research is the only two I could think of. Other than that, really 5 years we thought was very generous for our clinicians, which is what we did. So it's 5 years worth of data came in, and we went from three disparate systems, three different financial systems, two different lab systems. I can go on and on and on, all consolidating into one. Plus third parties, we turned off nearly 150 third parties, turned on maybe about 80 new ones, and then maybe needed to upgrade some of the ones to either enterprise or some newer version.
Excellent. Well, I really do appreciate your time. Any closing thoughts that you'd like to offer to somebody listening, perhaps? If you had a, you know, one wish, if you had a genie in a magic lamp and you could rub it, what would your one wish be if you could have something solved at your organization?
The thing that I wish for as a leader, quite frankly, is I knew all 903 people as much as I wanted to. I don't know them all as best I want to know them all, because this is my family, and I don't know the family members as well as I'd like to, because there's just so many of them. And so my wish is to have those interactions to get to know them better.
Thank you, Rob. For our listeners, this has been Dr. Robert Adamson, a pharmacist by training, the Executive Vice President and Chief Information Officer of the Robert Wood Johnson Barnabas Health, current operational leader of the Epic EHR implementation, and previously the chief pharmacy officer of RWJ Barnabas. Rob, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Take care. Have a great day.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.